Hello, this is Chris with the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, April 28th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. Pontiac reevaluates streetscape. City had sought $2 million state grant from Pontiac. After losing out on $2 million in grant funding offered by the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, the city of Pontiac must reconsider the size and funding sources of its streetscape plans. On April 22nd, Governor Pritzker announced the receipts of $30 million awarded through the Rebuild Illinois Downtowns and Main Streets and the Research in Illinois to Spur Economic Recovery programs. The RDMS and RISE grant programs are essential to supporting economic development in communities that need it most, DCEO Director Kristen Richards said in a news release. The state of Illinois is providing resources to revitalize downtown spaces and boost economic growth while investing in Illinois' top-rated infrastructure. Pontiac Administrator Jim Wolfords had said the city applied for up to $2 million through the RDMS program, which city leaders plan to use to kickstart downtown streetscape projects. Some of the proposed work includes improvements to sloping sidewalks, landscape beautification, and standardization of street lighting. City staff has also considered reducing Madison Street, one of the main retail corridors of downtown Pontiac, into one lane while adjusting on-street parking. The hope would then be to have more sidewalk space for pedestrian traffic and outdoor dining. However, Pontiac was not among the 16 recipients of RDMS funding. Despite this setback, Wolford said the City Council indicated it still wants to perform a streetscape project, even if it is entirely city-funded. The size and scope of the overall project is yet to be determined, and no timeline has been set for this scenario. The city will surely be looking to tap into any other grant opportunities as they arise. If we design a program that is manageable in phases for the city to self-fund, any grants could just add to the scope or supplant any self-funded only phases. Streetscape plans were said to be one of the end-of-life projects for Pontiac tax increment financing districts, all of which are set to expire within the next decade. Although Pontiac was not among the local recipients of RDMS or RISE funding, the city of Bloomington did receive close to $2 million in RDMS funding for its own streetscape plans, and the village of Flanagan received about $895,000 in RISE funding to dredge the lagoon at its wastewater treatment facility. The McLean County Regional Planning Commission also received $250,000 from the RISE program to fund a housing coordinator position for the next 2 years. Also on the front page, can robots solve farm problems? Illinois researchers study potential assistance. Robots come in many forms, some surprising. For example, an elevator is a robot. It may not look like a typical robot, but the way it operates makes it a robot. Given the ubiquity, their farm applications shouldn't be surprising. Shradi Salim Atala, an associate professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois, said students there are using robotics to solve issues of weed resistance. Robots can be deployed to remove weeds mechanically. Herbicide resistance is a long-term process, and it does make a difference if planning for the long term. Atala said one of the questions the researchers ask is the robot doing something the farmer could not do before, or is it replacing the farmer? The robotic weeding Illinois researchers are focused on involves the robot being able to get under the corn canopy to mechanically remove weeds. Another project involves a robot harvesting cherry tomatoes in a greenhouse using human prosthetic arms. So far, they have found that using robots increases production, reduces loss of tomatoes, and is comparable to human labor. Atala said it does have its limitations. It is unable to detect all the tomatoes, thus the robot is an assistant, not a replacement for human labor. Garish Chowdhury, an associate professor with joint appointment in agricultural engineering, computer science at the University of Illinois, said that a lot of advances in farming have been spurred by using machines for things that take too long for humans to do. For those worried about robotics taking over all labor, relax. The development of robots has multiplied productivity instead of taking it over. Even when farmers are using planters today, they are using autosteer. Robots have always been there as an assistant to humans. Asala Issa, an assistant professor of extension specialist in the Agricultural and Biological Engineering Department, focuses on how robots change agriculture safety. Issa said that with an autonomous robot, special consideration goes to what a farmer or worker is doing. For example, if you have multiple robots in following a produce worker during harvest to carry the crop, the platform reduces the weight the human bears. However, the time the worker spends bending over to harvest is increased, which means a person will need to be careful of new ergonomic issues that may arise. He also pointed out commercial implications for utilizing robots. For example, using a laser for a mechanical weeder could replace a large number of workers. In some cases, robots can be operated remotely. There is the possibility that companies could design things where they could convince people to stay in rural communities by allowing them to work remotely. And from Springfield, crisis looms for foster agencies. Insurance companies reduce coverage options for agencies. Insurance companies are reducing the scope of coverage for some community foster agencies in Illinois, leading to higher costs, diminished coverage, and fewer options for agencies who say a continuance of the trend could lead to closures. If the situation worsens, some foster agencies warn they will have to shut down, sending children in their facilities back under the care of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, an agency advocate says doesn't have the capacity to handle an influx of foster children. In Illinois, DCFS contracts with community-based foster agencies in order to house and provide services for children in state care. The department reported that the state had about 20,000 foster children in 2024, with more than 4,000 of them in the care of community-based foster or group homes. These agencies are licensed by DCFS and must have many types of insurance to operate, including liability insurance, which protects them against claims resulting in injuries or damage to property. If a person sues DCFS and seeks damages, the highest amount they can receive in damages is capped at $2 million, which the state recently extended to foster parents. Lawsuits against community-based agencies, however, do not have a cap, and in recent years, many agencies have faced lawsuits resulting in large payouts or settlements. In 2018, the father of a 2-year-old boy who died after Lutheran Social Services of Illinois placed him back in the care of his mother, sued the foster agency seeking $45 million in damages. LSSI placed Levandis Hudson back in his mother's care in late 2010. Around 6 months later, he was rushed to the hospital with severe injuries, where he ultimately died. The Chicago Tribune reported that a medical examiner ruled Hudson's death a homicide caused by multiple blunt force injuries resulting from child abuse. Hudson's mother was charged with first-degree murder in 2012, but has not yet faced trial. A jury awarded $45 million in damages, although the payout was ultimately about half that due to a deal struck by both parties late in the trial. Other similar lawsuits against foster agencies have resulted in large payouts across the country, even in instances where agencies have denied wrongdoing and claimed negative outcomes were beyond their control. In turn, insurance companies that provide liability coverage for the agencies are taking monetary hit after hit and raising premium prices or reducing their offerings in response. The insurers say the risk is too high to continue to insure foster agencies. After a case in California was settled in December for $15 million, Nonprofits Insurance Alliance of California, the main liability insurance provider in the state, announced it would not renew any agency plans and pulled out of California entirely. Now that the organization is sounding alarm bells as it begins to scale back coverage in other states, including Illinois. Andrea Durbin, CEO of the Illinois Collaboration on Youth, said in an interview that the crisis is a very complicated issue. "I think people who have been harmed should have opportunities to recover from that harm. The complexity of it is how do you make sure that people get the kind of restitution that they're entitled to, without also completely undermining the community-based infrastructure that serves kids and families today." Pamela Davis, the founder, president, and CEO of Nonprofits Insurance Alliance, said the organization had never previously done a mass non-renewal like the one in California. She said insurance companies are struggling to distinguish low-risk foster agencies from high-risk ones, since agencies who are doing a good job and those who are doing a bad job are getting sued the same. In Illinois, NIA scaled back its coverage by placing $1 million limits on the coverage that protects agencies against claims for physical or sexual abuse, known as improper sexual conduct and physical abuse, or ISCPA coverage. This means that if a foster agency is sued for sexual or physical abuse, NIA will only cover up to $1 million of the settlement, even as many lawsuits are being settled for much more. Usually insurance companies offer umbrella coverage beyond the company's limit, but NIA is also no longer providing umbrella coverage for ISCPA coverage or social services professionals coverage, which protects the agency's social workers if they're sued for misconduct. The company has also significantly increased the cost of ISCPA coverage, the effects of which were felt by the Center for Youth and Family Solutions, an Illinois provider of child welfare, behavioral health, and youth services, which is insured by NIA. The center is one of the largest foster agencies in the state, serving more than 1,200 foster children across 37 counties in Illinois. Its CEO, Patrick Phelan, said the total cost for the agency's professional liability insurance in 2019 was a little more than $45,000. When his agency renewed its insurance earlier this year with NIA, the cost was more than $1 million. Phelan said he had to lay off staff and cut additional services in order to pay the insurance bill. As costs have increased, Phelan said the agency experienced a decrease in coverage. "There's really only two insurers left in Illinois who are offering coverage, and neither of them will write a new policy." Durbin said some agencies simply can't afford this increase, and since traditional carriers are also not taking any new clients, foster agencies aren't able to drop their coverage in search of lower rates elsewhere. In a statement, DCFS called the crisis a national issue, saying that while DCFS is aware of some providers who have received notices of non-renewal for their current insurance, DCFS is not aware of any providers who have been unable to subsequently obtain liability insurance, albeit at a higher cost, before their current policy ends. Durbin said that although it's technically correct to say that no agencies have been unable to find insurance, she's aware of four that have been dropped by traditional insurance carriers like NIA. She said these agencies were then forced to get insurance through excess and surplus lines, which is a market that sells insurance to cover things traditional insurance companies have deemed high risk and won't cover. Illinois lawmakers have filed legislation aiming to curb this crisis, although it hasn't gained traction this session. Senate Bill 1696, sponsored by Senator Laura Fine, and House Bill 3138, sponsored by Susan Ness, have been described by advocates as short-term solutions. The bills would give agencies immunity from civil liability for 2 years unless the agency engages in willful and wanton conduct defined as deliberate intention to cause harm or unintentional harm due to utter indifference to or conscious disregard for a child's safety. The bills would also create a task force to develop and recommend a permanent solution to lawmakers by the end of 2026. Joseph Monahan, a trained social worker, founder of a Chicago law firm and a member of the board of directors at Profera, a liability insurance company for over 100,000 behavioral health professionals, called the proposal a start. He said some lawyers and advocates take issue with the legislation's proposed immunity for agencies because they believe it would stop children who have been harmed from receiving adequate compensation. One solution some have offered is to move lawsuits against foster agencies under the jurisdiction of Illinois Court of Claims, which he said would simply be a more arduous process for foster children to have to navigate. Monahan also took issue with the bill's proposal of a task force, saying the problem is well documented and arguing for more direct action. Davis, the CEO of Nonprofits Insurance Alliance, said the company is also scaling back coverage in Pennsylvania and Florida, while Monahan said agencies and advocates in New York and Nebraska are also raising concerns. That's why advocates are calling for a federal solution. Durbin said her organization has met with advocates in Illinois, other states, and Congress in an attempt to organize advocates on a national level. Phelan said Representative Darren LaHood visited the center's headquarters in Peoria recently to tour the facility. But Phelan said the number one topic on his agenda was to discuss the crisis. We were sharing these challenges with him, really hoping that we can help and trying to get some interaction on a federal solution to the problem. Although advocates agree that children who are harmed should receive compensation for their experiences, they say the fact that foster agencies don't have damage caps puts a target on their back that some lawyers take advantage of. A lot of the opposition is coming from the Trial Lawyers Association, who have recognized us as a source of organizations that can be litigated against. And they're not seeing that I think our demise will ultimately leave them with nobody to sue. Illinois Trial Lawyers Association President Sarah Sagler said she doesn't know if there's been an uptick in the cases of abuse, but that the recent cases with large damage payouts have resulted from awful cases of foster children being abused. These are the most vulnerable group of people, so to put the solution on the backs of kids who have been abused or raped, or worst case scenarios, murdered, cannot be the solution. It's an insurance problem, and it should have an insurance solution. She said she doesn't agree that the solution to the issue is the indemnity of foster agencies. There's just been some awful cases that have resulted in these larger verdicts, but in those situations, the solution shouldn't be not to hold people accountable for the harm they're doing to foster children. NSF director quits as cuts royal researchers. Ashley Dyer's dream of winning a National Science Foundation grant to pursue discoveries in bird conservation started when she was an early career professor with an infant in her arms and a shoestring laboratory budget. Competition is intense for NSF grants, a key source of funding for science research at U.S. universities. It took 3 failed applications and years of preliminary research before the agency awarded her one. Then came a Monday email informing Dyer that Trump administration was cutting off funding, apparently because the project investigating the role of bird feeders touched on themes of diversity, equity, and inclusion. "I was shocked and saddened," said Dyer, a professor at Virginia Tech's Department of Fish and Wildlife Conservation. We were just at the peak of being able to get our findings together and do all of our analysis. There's a lot of feelings of grief. Hundreds of other university researchers had their National Science Foundation funding abruptly canceled April 18th to comply with Trump's directives to end support of research on diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as the study of misinformation. It's the latest front in Trump's anti-DEI campaign that has also gone after university administrations, medical research, and the private sector. The NSF's director, Seth Menpenchanan, defended the agency's priorities but then quit on Thursday, saying he had done all I can to advance the critical mission of the agency. More than 380 grant projects have been cut so far, including work to combat internet censorship in China and Iran, with a project consulting with indigenous communities to understand environmental changes in Alaska's Arctic region. One computer scientist was studying how artificial intelligence tools could mitigate bias in medical information, and others were trying to help people detect AI-generated deepfakes. A number of terminated grants sought to broaden the diversity of people studying science, technology, and engineering. NSF, founded in 1950, has a $9 billion budget that can be a lifeline for resource-strapped professors and the younger researchers they recruit to their teams. It has shifted priorities over time, but it is highly unusual to terminate so many midstream grants. Some scientists saw the cuts coming after Senator Ted Cruz last year flagged thousands of NSF-funded projects he says reflected a woke DEI, or Marxist agenda, including some, but not all of the projects cut Friday. Still, Dyer said she was incredibly surprised that her bird project was axed. A collaboration with other institutions, including the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, it tapped into Project Feeder Watch, a website and app for sharing bird observations. Dyer's team had collected data from more than 20,000 Americans on their birdwatching habits, fielding insights on how outdoor feeders were affecting wildlife and also people's mental well-being. The only mention of the word diversity in the grant abstract is about bird populations and not people. But the project explicitly sought to engage more disabled people and people of color. That fit with NSF's longtime requirement that funded projects must have a broad impact. We thought, if anything, maybe we'd be told not to do that broader impacts work and to remove that from our project. We had no expectation that the entire grant would be unfunded. On the day the grants were terminated, Panthea, the NSF's director since 2020, said on the agency's website that it was still supported research on broadening participation, but those efforts should not be preference some groups at the expense of others or directly or indirectly exclude individuals or groups. Less than a week later, Pencha announced his resignation. The NSF declined to share the total number of canceled grants, but Trump's Department of Government Efficiency, run by billionaire Musk, posted on X that NSF had canceled 402 wasteful DEI grants, amounting to $233 million. It didn't say how much of that had already been spent. Grants typically last for several years. Karen Cooper, a North Carolina State University professor of forestry and natural resources, said she expected her work would be targeted after it made Cruz's list. Her grant project also sought to include people of color, people with disabilities, in participatory science projects, in collaboration with the Audubon Society, and with the aim of engaging those who have historically been excluded from natural spaces and bird watching groups. One doctoral student left her job and moved her family to North Carolina to work with Cooper on a stipend and the grant helped fund. We've been trying to make contingency plans. Nonetheless, it's a legal thing. It's violating the terms, conditions of the award, and it really harms our students. Along with eliminating DEI research, NSF said it will no longer support research with the goal of combating misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation that could be used to infringe on the constitutionally protected speech rights of American citizens across the United States in a manner that advances a preferred narrative about significant matters of public debate. Several researchers said they weren't sure why their funding was terminated, other than that their abstracts included terms like censorship or misinformation. The lack of transparency around this process is deeply concerning, said Eric Wustrow, an engineering professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, whose grant aims to study and combat internet censorship in countries like China and Iran. Did they just control F for certain words, ignoring context? NSF said on its website that there is not a list of words to avoid, but that misinformation research is no longer aligned with NSF's priorities. And from the local page, Rivian adds AI exec to board. Rivian added a high-profile new executive to its board, Aidan Gomez, co-founder and CEO of generative AI company Cohere. The appointment signals Rivian, a California-based company that manufactures all of its electronic trucks, SUVs, and commercial delivery vans in Normal, is prioritizing AI on the back of its $5.8 billion deal the EV maker struck with Volkswagen to develop EV software. According to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, Gomez will serve in the position until 2026. Gomez brings substantial expertise in AI to Rivian's board. He kicked off his career working as a researcher at Google, where at just 20 years old, he co-authored a seminal paper on a new deep learning architecture that Time notes fundamentally changed the AI industry. He went on to co-found Cohere to help enterprises use generative AI in applications such as chatbots and search engines. Exactly how Gomez's expertise might help Rivian isn't clear, but the announcement does come on the heels of a $5.8 billion joint venture Rivian formed with Volkswagen to accelerate the development of EV software and reduce the cost of the vehicles. The joint venture builds on the software and electrical architecture of Rivian, with the company expected to license out its intellectual property to the joint venture. Although both companies expressed the intention of developing vehicles based on the technology that comes out of the venture, TechCrunch reported that may also sell its technology to other companies. Meanwhile, Rivian is also pushing ahead with advanced driver assistant features, and in March launched a hands-free driver assistance feature that is meant to work on 135,000 miles of highway across the U.S. and Canada. The company is targeting 2026 for a hands-off, eyes-off feature. TechCrunch also reported that Rivian has been working to develop an AI-powered assistant for its vehicles for several years, although that work is not covered by the joint venture. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Bloomington Pentagraph for Monday, April 28th. Please stay tuned.